This is the beginning of part two of an interview with former Marine and Iraq veteran Benjamin Lewis. Sounds like you had maybe begun to think more about the war at this time because, as you said, you were training people how to avoid violence and de-escalate. Is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely. It was during this time that I started reflecting a lot, and I don't know if that, I think, if anything, that maybe led to me drinking a little bit more. But, yeah, I was reflecting and remembering some of the things I'd seen and witnessed in Iraq. And I think the hardest part for me was the ability for the Marine Corps to keep the Marines ignorant on the situation. We were in, I think one of the most heart-wrenching experiences was we were in the Fallujah, doing the push through Fallujah back in 2004. And, we heard some M16 shots going off and, I was kind of looking around going, what the fuck is going on? And hopped up and, I hear my name getting called. And I'm running up there and they were shooting at this lady who was walking up to our pods, waving her arms and asking for help in Arabic. And the Fallujah dialect was a lot different than the Haditha dialect I had learned, but communication I discovered in Iraq was just, you just got to get the ideas across. You got to get the understanding there. The words don't matter so much. So I was talking to her with, some pretty aggressive other members in my platoon, obviously because they had fired warning shots at this individual. And so I came up close and I talked to her and, her face looked like death itself. She had salt crusted all over her face. It was obvious that she'd been crying for quite a bit. And so I was talking to her and kind of got the story that, she had a family and, we were like, well, go back home, go to your family. And, then it came out that she was, she was asking for help because 3 days ago her entire family, her children, had been pretty much buried in the rubble of their house. She was asking for help, and I was asking my captain, my staff sergeant, can we help her? Can we help her? And, you have to walk to the Red Cross aid station, which was, a few miles away. And, it was obvious that, what can we do? Well, nothing. We can't leave our pods. Well, all right. So we gave her a couple of bottles of water and, wished her luck. And then it kind of dawned on me later on that, me being the adjusting gunner for the mortar section, there was good probability that I was the one that, put those rounds on her house.
And that must have been very disturbing.
Yeah, and then there was, there was always the consequences of, the jokes and the jesting of other members of my platoon, which I know this is a kind of a roundabout way of saying the ignorance Marine Corps instills on the Marines. I was, from then on, I was the Iraqi lover and I was the sympathizer and, I was sort of the, in this racist ploy, I was the guy that was on the other side or supported Iraqis. And that became more prevalent as I was instructing just very ignorant statements. You'd hear them all the time, well, fuck those sand niggers and this and that and the other thing. And that was an obstacle that I always tried to overcome, but I would say I never successfully was able to do it with any of the Marines.
Well, good for you for even trying. It's an environment of such intense propaganda.
Right. It was at that time, too, that I was starting to realize, all the propaganda that led me to joining the Marine Corps from a very, very young age. I started looking at all the movies I used to watch and, looked at these heroes in these war movies, Clint Eastwood and, whoever, Heartbreak Ridge and all these stories that I grew up idolizing, Top Gun, whatever. I started realizing that, the American society was heavily, heavily indoctrinated, and it starts from as soon as you can start receiving messages from a television,
Yes, it does. And now you've broken through that wall of propaganda.
Yeah, I started attending community college right after I joined the Marine Corps with the idea of being a philosophy, a double major in English and modern literature, because I was heavily interested in the resistance movements of the 60s. And that reading led me deeper, and I also was hoping to be a philosophy major with an emphasis in peace studies. So my studies were going in that direction.
Well, let's go back and talk about what happened when you got out of the Marines. When were you discharged?
I got out of the Marines in February 2007. I took almost a month of terminal leave and got out pretty early. Pretty much right after I got out of the Marine Corps, I attended a spring semester at Mount San Antonio Community College.
And just recently, you heard from the Marines again.
That's right. Actually, I didn't directly hear from the Marine Corps. They, I think they kind of operate like debt collectors. My parents received a phone call and a letter. The phone call they got said that the Marines just wanted to update my personal information. Obviously, they don't pick up any phone calls from the Marine Corps. But my dad called me at about 6:30 in the morning, and I called him back, and he said, "Hey, do you want me to open this letter?" And I said, "Yeah, you better." And he read it to me, and it was my notification for my screening to determine if I'm eligible to go back to Iraq.
You mean not just to go back to active duty, but to go to Iraq?
I should be more specific. It was go back to active duty, but as I looked up the presidential executive order and the different orders that were and references attached to the Marine to the letter, you do stumble across Iraq and Afghanistan are the two deployment options available for recalled Marines. As I continued researching it and the length of deployment, once you're in the Marine Corps, a lot of the foggy stuff kind of becomes clear, and it was very evident that it was a combat tour.
So you and I are talking here on the 8th of October, and you're being called up to be examined to see if you're fit to be reactivated on October 19th, is that right?
That's correct.
And are you going to go to that appointment?
It is my intention to go to that appointment, yes.
And if they find you fit and they call you back up, what's your plan?
My intention is to be as public as possible, to work with different organizations that I've already contacted and different people I know, and see whatever support I can garner to make it very public to specifically other vets that I'm going to refuse activation to the military.
You say you particularly want other vets to know about this stand you're taking.
I think that it's important for veterans to know that they don't have to go back. They can refuse activation. They've already done combat tours, and they've witnessed firsthand. I think the ones that are choosing not to go back, now that they've been out of the service, which is, 24/7 indoctrination, you're on base, you wake up, you're in formation, you're getting fed bullshit, you go back, you exercise, you get back, you're in formation, you get fed bullshit, you get in formation before lunch where you're fed bullshit, after lunch you're fed bullshit, and then you wait around all afternoon before you get in formation and fed bullshit again, While you're in the Marine Corps, it's kind of hard to realize what you're a part of, because your life is really kind of, when am I going to be able to eat? When am I going to be able to see my girlfriend? When am I going to be able to do this? And you really live a day-to-day existence. And the truth is, you don't really have options to expand your horizons. I know my battalion pretty much forbade any Marines going to college, which is, promised by your recruiter, because there was no time for it, because we're in the field training for deployment again. It's really hard to read a book after you've been exhausted all day through constant exercise, or, it's 120 degrees and 29 palms, and you just kind of want to drink a cold beer and, watch some television. So I think a lot of people, after they've been out of the Marine Corps, and they've had some time to themselves and some time to think about it, you know, and they're not going to lunch and watching Fox News, and they're not going to dinner and watching Fox News because that's all they will play in the mess halls and on the Marine Corps bases. You know, once they get out of that indoctrination, they start to kind of open their eyes and look around and realize that, you know, maybe this war isn't such a legitimate ideal.
And you're a good example of what happens when soldiers are given the time to think. You're going to say no to going back.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, and I know that at this point in time, I could just say no and refuse to go to the screening, but my personal conviction that, you know, the war is wrong and to get the message out there, I really do want to go to the screening, and I want to show the military that, yes, I am 23 years old, I'm physically fit, and I have perfect test scores on the ASVAB, and I've got lots of infantry experience, and I would be your ideal candidate. You know, I want to make that point to them, and after I've shown them that I am their perfect candidate, I want to stand up to them and tell them, no, I'm refusing to be reactivated because I don't believe in what you're doing. And my hope is that by doing that, by showing other vets who are facing the same situation that, you know, they're in young, they're fit, they're perfect to go back to Iraq, that they don't have to do it. They can refuse reactivation.
Well, good for you for taking this principled stand, Benji. You're making a powerful statement against war and militarism, and all of us in the peace movement are grateful for your commitment and your courage. Thanks so much for talking with Courage to Resist.
It's my pleasure, sir, and I hope to continue talking to you guys in the future, and I appreciate your help, and not only my personal matter, but everything you guys stand for.